All right, today we have Jessa speaking. It has been such a treat getting to know Jessa. She usually sits next to me in the Breakfast Club. And, you know, the biggest thing I got to say about Jessa, well, first, you know, this program doesn't just offer sobriety. It offers so many more promises. And if we put ourselves into the program, all those promises will come true. And with Jessa, she used to be so shy and quiet, and just watching her blossom and come out of her shell, that's one of the gifts of the program, and I love watching her grow. So I'm going to give you Jessa and let her tell her story.
All right, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jessa, alcoholic.
Hi, Jessa.
I was asked to tell my story about 10 months ago, and as soon as I was asked that, I just burst out into tears. I'm just completely fearful, and it says in the promises the fear of economic insecurity and people will leave us, and I guess that people part didn't really come true until somebody asked me to tell my story. And then I started really delving into some character defects and some fears, and I mean, God's just brought me a long way in those last 10 months, and realizing that you people are my friends, and I'm amongst you, and that, you know, like, woo! It shouldn't matter what anybody thinks about me, you know, like, it's none of my business what other people think about me, and so that's been a huge character defect of mine, just trying to people please. So I guess I'll start at the beginning, right? Okay. So, well, my sobriety date is August 15th, 2010. So I need to write my name on the birthday sheet. So, God willing, I'll have 5 years in August. So, original sobriety date was in 2008, and I had a good almost 2 year run in that, but I'll get to that part a little later in my story. Born February 2nd, 1980, in Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, because we always specify when we're from Kentucky what part it is. I was born to pretty young parents, my mom and dad. They're just getting started, and they're, you know, woo. So I was born in Northern Kentucky, and you know, a few years later, 4 years later, we moved to Florida, and that's when my little sister was born. So she's a little younger than me. Clearwater, Florida was we lived in ABC apartments, so. And we went to the beach every weekend. It was great. My family was, I had a pretty awesome upbringing. Went to church every Sunday. We, every day the doors were open, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night. So I got a nice concept of God, that's for sure, growing up. Moved around a bunch. We after that, we went to Michigan. So about 8 years old, I'm living in Michigan. Couple years, and we were two Floridian little girls that, I mean, I didn't remember the snow, and then we had like 4 feet on the ground, and walking to school 10 blocks up hills both ways, you know. My parents had an orange Cadillac with white leather interior that didn't start in the snow, so I mean that didn't help too much. So I was pretty impressionable years there too. I remember when we moved to Georgia a couple years later, everybody said I had a northern accent. I'm like, I have an accent, y'all. So, about 1990, I was 10 years old, living here in Georgia, and still have a nice little family life. My dad's getting different jobs and getting promoted. So, started out in the trailer park, then went to the little ABC apartment, and then and rented a house. Then they bought a house, and I mean, things just escalated. My dad went from doing cable to like computers, so it was like pretty big. You know, Georgia's my home, I would say. I've been here 25 years, so anybody really asked me where I'm from, you know, this is home for sure. So, you know, middle school growing up, like I said, I had that nice concept with God and went to a lot of vacation Bible schools. And I just know that when I was younger, I felt the presence of God. And my parents were very spiritual. And, you know, like I always looked up to them and almost put them on a pedestal, almost like they were God. So, you know, that one day when I found out they were fallible, I mean, I think that really had a huge impression on me. You know, going to middle school and, you know, kids are mean, but I think everybody has that experience in middle school. But I mean, I always had that closeness with God to help me through it. And it was great. So high school was good. So I was in a art school, so we were performing arts, singing, dancing, drama. So it was like fame, pretty much, you know, like singing and dancing during lunchtime. It was great. So stayed super busy in high school. I played soccer, and me and my friends in high school, we really didn't even have any time to get into too much trouble, which was great. Like, there might have been drugs around, but we didn't really see them. Like, teensy bit of drinking. My first drink ever was 17. I was 17. And I can remember it was a shot of Wild Turkey. So, yeah. And I tried to sip it. So. They're like, no, you're supposed to. Oh, okay. So I took a couple of those, and I had a, you know, awesome night. It was just like, whoa. I'm like, this is it, man. This is what I'm talking about. And but the next day, the remorse was like so painful. I just couldn't believe it. You know, I was hungover and cried, and then so a couple weeks later, I did it again. You know, so that's. But that was my bout in high school with alcohol. That was it. So graduated with honors, and I mean. Had a great time in high school. I was so dedicated. I lived in North Cobb, and my school was in South Cobb, Mableton area. Pebble Brook High School, PHS. So I got up at 5:30 in the morning to catch a bus that would take me all the way, and they had a couple stops on the way, all the way to Mableton. And so, I mean, dedication, man. I was in it to win it, and the whole time, going to church all the time. And I know there's one pivotal moment in high school that a family thing. So I found out my mom wasn't as you know, I have her on this pedestal. You know, she's God. Like, she can do no wrong. Like, I want to aspire to be just like her. And she made a mistake, and it affected our family quite a bit. And I think at that point, I was just like, what? Like, I guess I don't have to be perfect, because growing up, it was a lot of perfectionism. You know, like, my dad was a perfectionist, and he was verbally abusive, and but he was abused physically. So, like, he did break that cycle. Like, I think he might have spanked me one time with a belt, my mom said, and she put her foot down, never again, so... I mean, don't get it twisted. We did have the wooden spoon, and well, one time with the wooden spoon, and you were good. You're like, all mom had to do is threaten that wooden spoon, and you were like, I'm good. So, yeah, I mean, there was discipline. So we were good girls, me and my sister, and my little sister. She's amazing. But so that one instance, I think I made a decision in my head that I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to do everything right. I don't have to, you know, be this way anymore. I can do whatever I want, you know, like, so the church started getting less and less. I'm in college now, and, you know, I still get drugged because I'm drugged to the church. So, my, you know, I'm living under my parents' roof. We're going to go to church, so... you know, and I met some cool people there, and I hung out with some church people for a while, and then I also hung out with my college friends, and they were, you know, we were drinking, and you know, it was, of course, purely drinking. So, and going out to clubs, and I didn't always drink alcoholically at first. So, I mean, I would be the DD sometime, maybe just drink one beer. And so, I mean, I kind of had a grip at the beginning. And Zimas were big, yeah. So got some Zimas, got somebody to buy us Zimas because we're not 21 yet. And go down to Buckhead when it was Buckhead, and college night, and hopping, club hopping. Every once in a while, one of the ID checkers would give somebody a 21 band, and then it was on. They were buying the drinks the rest of the night. And so, I mean, it was party time, but I also was very dedicated to school. I got up at, I took the morning classes, it was 8 a.m., and I just kind of try to continue the high school thing, you know, like, so at first it was great. I had friends flunking out and I'm like, what? All you have to do is show up, you know, really in the beginning, that's all it is. So, yeah, I was doing good in school and, just had my college friends and then some church friends I would hang out with. And then, you know, I had a friend that, I was close to in school, in church, and he had a freak accident. They all went snowboarding and skiing, and he broke his legs, and the bone marrow got into his bloodstream, and he passed away. So that was a huge blow, and something I really didn't even want to step foot back into that church. I just didn't want anything to do with it. Yeah, so I just turned to my college friends after that, you know, and sought relief in the bottle, and met a boy, and he was going into the Navy. I was working at U.S. Play, and started off in Publix, and Publix is great. Like, that's where you should put your kids when they first get a job. Bert bought my first car working at Publix, and yeah, the whole time I was in high school, I worked too. Like, there, I started at 14. Working at Winn-Dixie when there was one. And I was weekends only and only 4-hour shifts when you're 14. So a lot of child labor laws there. And then graduated to Publix where I made like $5.25 an hour and saved up enough money to, and my parents definitely helped me with a down payment. But after that, it was all me paying the car payments and stuff. So, and then working at US Play and things are getting a little more wild and people are drinking and bowling, and so I met this dude, and he was going into the Navy. He was there with this recruit team, and he got my number. He lived in Cartersville, and we went out on a few dates before he went to boot camp or whatever. Thursday. And so he was very impressionable on me. Like, I was just like, whoa, in love. And we dated, even though he's miles and miles away. And we dated for like 3.5 years. And but it was kind of cool because I got to go visit him different places. And he was stationed, finally he was stationed in Whidbey Island. So I got to go to Seattle a bunch. And that, it's beautiful out there, very pretty. So, yeah. It was kind of cool having a boyfriend that was far away, because I'm a people pleaser, so if a guy's asking me for my number, I'm going to probably give it to him whether I want to or not. And so now I could say, hey, I have a boyfriend, even though he's never here, and I, you know, like, we talk on the phone. So that was helpful. That kept me out of a lot of, I think, like, crazy situations. So, all his friends lived in Cartersville, and I would still hang out with all his friends, and they were all pot smoking and all that, and it took me a while to give in, but I finally did. I was like, oh, why not? So, you know, and it made me sick for a while, and then it was really awesome. And a girlfriend of mine, I'd known since Publix. She was one of my besties. one day we were driving around and she picked up a pack of cigarettes at the store. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh. So not too long after that, I'm smoking cigarettes. And then she was huge into the marijuana, so we started smoking together a bunch. And I know one time we were driving around and parked her car at her parents to get something and jumped back in the car. And she had a million cigarette packs in the back, or empty ones, in the back seat of her car. And it's dusk. We drive out of her neighborhood, and a cop is there. And so she flips on her lights, and then she pulls her seatbelt on, and then we pull out on the main drag, and we see him follow us. And so I'm in the midst of, you know. He pulls us over, so I stick it in a cigarette pack and I throw it in the back seat. And he pulls us over and he's like, I smell marijuana in the car. And we're like, oh. And so he runs her license and she has a warrant out for her arrest. Apparently she never wears her seatbelt. So she had a seatbelt ticket she didn't know about or didn't pay. And so he cuffs her and puts her in the back seat. And then I'm just sitting there like, oh my God. So he comes around and, you need to tell me. It'll be better off if you tell me if there's, you know, in the car. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, back there. And like a million cigarette packs in the back seat, okay? So he starts searching and I want to help him. He's like, step aside. So, you know, I'm just sitting there freaking out and, he finds it, and we both go to jail, and so that was my first bout with jail, and it was like an 8-hour event, and I had some money saved up, so I didn't call my parents, no. I called a friend of mine. I'm like, please, go get me out. I've got the money. He just, you know, foot it, and then so he did. So I made it in bed at like probably 7 or 8 in the morning, and my mom woke me up. And I mean, I just told her right away. So, it was horrible. And I'm glad I said something because all of a sudden all these lawyers start sending me mail. And so that would have been a story to tell. I'm like, I don't know what that's all about. So we got me out of that. But it didn't stop me, you know, from smoking and drinking and... school became less important, but I was still doing it, and I was still passing. I just, guys, it took me 9 years to get a bachelor's degree, but I did it finally one day. So the disease progresses, and me and this guy, my boyfriend, we break up, and he's cheating, duh. He's 3,000 miles away. And so it ruins me. Oh, God. Oh, I was supposed to marry him. We had huge plans, you know. So, so we broke up, and I think I pretty much, woo. I was like, I really didn't care about anything anymore. I didn't care about myself especially. And so I got a big girl job. I started leasing apartments, and but first I, for some reason I wanted to stay up all night. I don't know. So my friend started doing some harder stuff, and I completely believe in singleness of purpose, and AA is for alcoholics, and I believe I am an alcoholic for sure, 100%. I just believe that, my story is a little different. I didn't have the DTs, the shakes, and all that. So my story goes a different way, and if it can help somebody, I would like to share some of that experience, strength, and hope. So the harder stuff, when I was in the early my early 20s, it was methamphetamine. So that's what I did. So me and all of our friends started doing that. And I mean, I'd seen it around before, and no, you know, But eventually it's there and you do it. And so that enabled me to take on the world because I'm up all the time. And so I actually got that job leasing apartments. So it was a nice, like, because I'm in marketing at school, and so that's sales, and it was some good experience. But I was just so out of my mind. Like, I was lived in northern Cobb County, and I was driving all the way inside the perimeter, and that wasn't so bad. I did that for like 3 months, and then they transferred me to Windward Parkway. So I was driving from North Cobb to Windward Parkway. So it's either 92, light after light after light after light, or it's 75, 285, 400. So it was like an hour and a half each way. So I did that for another 3 months. But I mean, I don't even know how I kept that. I don't even know how they let me stay there as long as they did, because I was just not right. And always late. I was up all night, but I was always late. So I don't understand that one. Because all my time was spent doing it. So, okay. So then I got let go from that job, and I started working at Singular, and things weren't much different there. I probably was there about 6 months, but heavy on it the whole time. I actually started dating the guy that's in the Navy's best friend, so that was awesome. He lived in Cartersville, and like I said, I hung out there a bunch, and one time he wanted to hang out, and well, he had a job, he had a car, he had a place to stay, he was going to school. And then I showed up, and I brought the drugs with me. And we did it all the time, and you know, I thought, whatever. But then he just wouldn't go away. Like, he kept calling me and stuff. So so I was like, okay, I guess we're dating. So, and he lives all the way in Cartersville, so I'm like, but I'm out there all the time, whatever. Anyone that would play my game and join in, and, you know, like, I wasn't quite an isolator yet. I'm pretty isolated. I didn't like to share, really. But, I mean, I also needed some company, so. So he lost everything, and that's on him, too, really. I was still in school. I would go. I would park at Kennesaw State. I'd be like, I got parking, yeah. And then I would sit in the car and just sit there and not go to class. I'm like, oh well, I guess that class is over. I guess I'll. And then I'd go to the next class, and I'd drive, and I'd sit in the parking lot, and I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna go in now. All right, I'm gonna go in now. Okay, well, kind of late now, so. Maybe I'll go in a couple more minutes, and no, I don't think so. So that's pretty much what happened to school. So I didn't register for classes for a couple semesters, thank God, because I didn't want, thank God my GPA didn't, you know, go too far down. So working at the Singular, of course I got fired, and job after job, and then my parents were still going to church and still together, and I really think they stayed together for me and my sister, and but they were working things out, and things were good with them, and they didn't quite know what was wrong with me. They thought depression because of the breakup. They thought, you know, like I would sleep for days whenever I was out, or I got a bad batch or anything like that. So they just couldn't really figure it out. I'm sure they were in denial. They knew I had done drugs, obviously. But they just didn't know. So they're going to this church, and there's a lady there that she had just lost her son to methadone overdose. So, and then my parents kind of shared, And then she was like, oh yeah, that's what it is. And so she had this fire up on her ass because, you know, she was going to save somebody. And so she scooped up me and John, and she took us to Ridgeview. And then Ridgeview's like, no, I mean, so we didn't have any money. So so what she did is she took us and held us at our house captive. And she gave us candy, and we watched movies, and we slept, and we slept, and we slept, and we slept. And then we were good. We were good. We were determined to beat it. We were not going to do it again. And we didn't. And so that was a miracle. That was a freaking miracle. See my teeth? Yeah. Yeah. So we were good, but we weren't. We were going to smoke weed instead. So that's what we were going to do. That was our plan. So we did. And drinking a little bit. And then when my little sister, she was a little more wild than I was. Like, I was pretty much, you know, straight and narrow in high school and stuff like that. But in high school, she was already smoking, drinking. But, I mean, she was always moderation. Like, she could always, I don't know how she does it. But she would have her little friends over, and I'd be like, what is that smell? I'm like, I barely knew what it was at the time. And so anyway, my parents, after me and John got good, they decided to move back to Northern Kentucky for a job opportunity for my dad. And so they did, and they left us the house. We would never move out, so they moved out. They were like, screw this. You're 24. We got to get away from you, so we're gone. So we took on a bunch of roommates, and we all paid them rent, and we stayed in the house. So it became a sorority house, yes. Because we're a bunch of college girls, and I was living in the basement. I paid the least amount of rent because I didn't have any money. And back at, oh, Red Lobster. I didn't even say anything about Red Lobster. Red Lobster was always my default job. Got it when I was 19, and, I mean, they were good to me. They were good, good, good to me. Because I think the GM had some issues of her own in the past, so she would always take me back. So I'd quit or get crazy messed up and not show up for a while, and they'd always take me back, and always take me back. I mean, I was good when I was working. I was good. I was, you know, on the money, always there on time, always working hard. That was instilled in me for sure. Like, my dad was a hard worker, man. He always provided. Like, you know, he was always the provider. So that was awesome. So, yeah. Back at Red Lobster. Yeah. Okay. Living in the basement. Okay. Just drinking, smoking, like I said. And then one day my sister's like, hey, here, take one of these. And it's a Xanax. So that became my new best friend. And so up or down or whatever, I don't care. As long as it's going to take me out of this, I'm good. So, yeah. So, you know, I completely go off the wall with those, like, duh. You know, and hiding it, nobody really knows how many I have, what I took. One time I took 4 bars and did the best karaoke of my life. And 4 of them. I mean, I with the tolerance of a, and if we couldn't find those, it was painkillers, you know, what they call it, solid alcohol, or, you know, same effect, you know, different form. And with the drinking as well. And that, phew, you're gone. So that was horrible. And but I managed to get pregnant. And and of course I didn't change while I was pregnant. And you know, I did some using when I was pregnant. I did. People still sold me pills, so I didn't drink, but I mean, same thing. So I've been working out the promises, won't regret the past or not wish to shut the door on it. And so, I mean, it still hurts and I'm still a little regretful, but I mean, I'm still praying about it and I'm supposed to tell John about it and I'm just waiting for the right time. But my daughter's beautiful. She was born May 9th, 2007. She was perfect. I mean, I thank God every day that, you know, I didn't mess her up. And so she was born and things didn't change. I actually managed to graduate at that time, so that was awesome. So I had a new degree, I had a new baby. You know, John was there, my the baby daddy, and he was helpful. And then my mom, as soon as the baby was mentioned, she's coming back. And so she moved in to our little bachelorette pad. So she moved in. I'm in her room, her giant room. And she's across the hall in this teeny tiny room. But, you know, we had the pack and play in there, and me and John, and my mom's across the hall, my sister, and more roommates. And so she's over the moon. My parents are done. They're done at this point. And so, you know, a new baby, mom's there, lots of support, and I was so depressed. Not a pill would fix it. And I was just so full of guilt, shame, remorse, and I mean, I could barely put my head on the pillow. I was just freaking done. I just remember, you know, I called it postpartum, but I know what it really was now, looking back. I was a mess. It was just, I needed something. I had that God-shaped hole that I needed filled, and I just didn't know how to fill it. This whole time, I'm thinking, what would God want with me? I'm not living right. You know, that's what I was taught, you know, in Southern Baptist, you know, like, live right, and then you can talk to God. You know, you got to do right, and then he's there for you. But this whole time, I mean, that's what I thought, and that's not true at all. I mean, I could have reached out at him at any time, but I didn't, you know. And so crazy depressed. We go out to Cartersville one day with the baby, and I steal a bunch of pills from John's mom, and I took them all. And I was so messed up that I couldn't see straight. My lips were blue. Must have been some morphine or something. But so what do? We call Miss Linda, the lady that got us off meth. She's like, we call her up. She's in Arkansas. So they bus me out to Arkansas. And I get there, and I'm like, yeah, this is going to work. This is good. And then she had boxed wine. I eyed that right away. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then some, like, Drambuie somewhere. I'm like, oh, yeah, I see that. Okay, cool. And so they all go to bed, and what do? Woo! You know, like, yeah, okay. I think I skipped a part, but anyway. So, yeah, okay, back up. February 14th. 2008. 28. Oh, by the way, I did not remember my birthday, my 28th birthday at all. I was like, yeah, I took a drink and that was it. I woke up on the living room floor going, what happened? Like, no idea. So, yeah, a few days later, you know, just escape reality. I just don't want to be so far from reality, what's right here in front of me. And so the 14th, my daughter has a doctor's appointment. So she's almost a year, I guess a 9-month checkup. So it's in Cartersville and I'm on 41. So I'm heading up 41, leasing apartments again. And, the girl that was my boss was a pot smoking, pill popping chick just like me. So it was, yeah, right on. So, one of the maintenance guys gave us a bunch of, whatever. Same story. And so I start driving and I bump a UPS truck. Thank God, because right at that moment I start seizing. She's in the back seat. The UPS guy calls the ambulance, and they take me to Cartersville Medical. And I wake up with tubes down my throat, and just freaking miracle. And that's when the gig is up. That's when everybody knows that I have a problem. Because, I mean, toxicology report right there. I mean, they know everything about it, right? Everything. And then they find it in my purse at the time, and so the gig is up. So that's when alcohol really enters the picture, because alcohol I can get readily. And so that's when, you know, we've got my daughter in a daycare, so I would drop her off in the morning, get the liquor, and just start drinking. Just start drinking. Pass out, and then hopefully wake up in time to go pick her up. Now, I'm supposed to be at work, but, you know, I got fired from that job, too. So that was a daily thing. That's when the alcohol really, really took it. That's why I know I'm an alcoholic. When nothing else is there, I will turn to alcohol. And then alcohol will 100% of the time lead me back to those DOCs, you know? So 100% of the time. So I'm in Arkansas, and she takes me to a meeting. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. Good. So sit through the meeting, I didn't hear nothing, and then I got the doctors at the hospital to write me a prescription, and I got her to take me to the Walmart to pick it up. So it's for depression. No, it was the same old. So I took all of those, end up at the ER out there in Arkansas, and then I'm getting the nurse there to feed me painkillers the whole time. And so I'm so tricky. And so then she's like, rehab, you're going to rehab. And I'm like, okay. So Memphis, Tennessee is where I end up. Downtown Memphis, Tennessee. And for those who are homeless, like myself, because everybody's kicking me out. And so that ones that you don't have to pay for, state funded. And so I'm there, and oh my gosh, I mean, those ladies in there, I was just like them. I was just like them. And we were so different, yet so the same. Like, I almost wish I could, like, check in on them, and, you know, I pray for them sometimes. I'm like, God bless, because, I mean, when you're in there like that with those girls, and sometimes you hate each other, and sometimes you know, you're just in it, you know? You're like there together at the bottom. You're at the freaking bottom. And I just hope that they're doing well, and I'll pray for them. I'll continue to pray for them. And my bestie in there, well, I did get bused to meetings the whole time I was there. So we go to meetings, and I start listening a little bit, you know, because I'm clear-headed for sure. It's the only place we can get coffee with caffeine is at the meetings. So that's exciting. Drink a bunch of coffee at those meetings. So then I, you know, I'm starting to listen, and you know, so many meetings that I can, like, I can tell you the promises by heart, like, but I never put it up. I mean, it was always here, never in the heart, you know what I'm saying? Like, I could recite it, and, I mean, I remember the very first passage I heard was about if you could drink, or people have tried to drink, like, you know, people have tried to, well, my hat's off to you if you can drink, like, you know what I'm saying, right? That part. Jeez, Pete. I should have highlighted it or something, but I didn't even know I was going to talk about it. But, yeah, I was like, well, that's me. I can do that. I can drink, like, you know, I'm not like you guys. I can definitely do that. That can happen for me, for sure. I had a drug problem. No, not the alcohol. So I don't know what you're talking about. So I never really picked up a white chip there, although some of the other girls did. And I was like, well, I got tons of days sober, so I don't need a white chip. So my bestie in there had a husband that brought us some pills. Yes, so we used in the treatment center. Now, this, I did find a sponsor, and I remember sitting there with her or calling her on the phone because, oh my gosh, we don't get to talk on the phone very much. So, yes, I'm on the phone. And being like, what is wrong with me? I had a near perfect upbringing. I mean, everybody has their problems, but like, I feel like a spoiled freaking brat. Some of these girls in here have gone through so much, and no wonder they use, no wonder they drink, no wonder they try to escape reality like they do. What is my problem? And she was like, I was like, why am I an alcoholic? And she was like, because. She's like, because, that's why. You just are. So, you know, like, get over it and let's recover. And so I, you know, got kicked out of the treatment center. And because I wasn't ready. I know, I remember the one girl in there, she had been there, this was her third time. She looked at me that night and she goes, you are not ready. Bye-bye. That's what she said to me. Yeah, because she was gosh darn ready. She'd been in and out. So she told me, you're not ready. So I was like, whatever. So I don't call anybody. I just go out on the, well, I call my sponsor. Yeah, my sponsor. She comes to pick me up. And she lets me stay with her. And, you know, call your parents, call somebody, have them come get you. Because I'm in Memphis, Tennessee. And so I don't. I call, how did I even meet this? Okay. So one of the other girls that was kicked out. So I call her. And so we get together with another guy and he's doing stuff, and then we do stuff, and, you know, so I leave my sponsor's place, and I'm just in Memphis, living with some guy, and I thank God for Sophia, because all I could see is my daughter, is her face, and if it wasn't for, I think, that face, I think, and God, you know, showing me her face, I think I would have ended up on a stripper pole in Memphis, just to make some money, just to keep doing what I was doing. But I decided that I was going to not do that. I was going to call. I had a really good girlfriend came scoop me up, and I ended up back at home. And so my mom is done. Done. John is done. He's getting paperwork written up to take my daughter away. My mom's like, you're out. Give me the key. So I go live with my dad, who is... just like me. So, yeah, I go live with him, and I'm drinking. They even actually let me hold Sophia. This is inside the perimeter now, so they let me keep Sophia one night, and she took a nap, so I drank a bunch of whiskey. Passed out, and I woke up, and I had no idea what happened. Like, somebody came and got her and brought her safe to John's arms. Like, I don't even know. So my dad was like, marijuana, you should just smoke weed, you know, like, leave the alcohol behind. So he wanted me to do the marijuana maintenance program. So that's what I wanted to do. So I did it. And one day they didn't have the marijuana. So instead they had the other stuff. So I did that. So this was a tailspin. Like, thank God my mom stopped enabling me. This was the point where I just, anything and everything in front of me, I did it, whatever it was. And super dark, dark time. And one night I was laying there on a stranger's couch. Somebody was rummaging through my purse. I didn't care. Like, I was just back, a head up, and like, God freaking spoke to me. All the prayers that I'd prayed and all the people who had prayed for me. It's just something happened, and I can't explain it. And I was just done. I knew at that moment I was done. So I ended up back in the ER. My mom, I called her with her new husband, and they came and scooped me up. And they put me in the ER. And this time I knew not to say that I was suicidal, because last time I ended up in the detox center, and that was not cool. So I was like, no, not suicidal. Just want to get help. Yeah. So I did. And I ended up, Ricky is my mom, was my mom's new husband, and he was on it, man. He was going to find me a rehab. So Mother's Rehab, he punched in. So Mother's Making a Change in Marietta, Georgia. That's where I went. And man, I was ready. I was ready. And what a beautiful thing to finally be ready, you know? To finally be ready. And so I was there for a year and a half. And I was so ready that all my drug screens were clean. Like, I was so ready, I didn't have to do inpatient. So that was amazing. What time is it? Oh, my God. I'm good? Okay. So I was so ready that, you know, it was just, I was ready. So, well, we got that point, don't we? So, I mean, I was voted best newcomer of the treatment center. There was like 40 girls there, and I was the best. I mean, they were just like, whoa, this girl is freaking ready. So, of course, somehow I managed to keep my car. So, yes, I got to drive to meetings two a week for sure, I think was our. But I went to a bunch, whatever. I didn't have anything else going on. So, and I knew the meetings were great because I knew people were happy in these meetings. I couldn't quite figure out why, but I was gonna go to meetings. So I did. And I went to a lot of meetings all in the Kennesaw area because that's where I was living at the time. And then I needed a sponsor. And so I walked outside one day. I prayed to God, please help me find a sponsor because I don't even know what I'm doing. So this lady was walking in the parking lot, and she commented on the weather, and I said, hey, will you sponsor me? And that was it. Like, I didn't hear her speak in the meeting or anything. And she looked at me, and she was like, I'm alcohol. I'm like, that's okay. I'm alcohol, too. I'm all this other stuff, but that's okay because it's the same, and I think that we're going to be good together. And so I called her. Most days, and we met, and it was amazing. And the first year, I worked a step every month, and that's just the way it went. It wasn't supposed to be planned that way. It just kind of did happen that way. And I was at the treatment center every day for 6 months. Then the next 6 months, it was 2 days a week. And then the next 6 months, it was aftercare. So, I mean, it was serious rehab. So, and I learned a bunch, and I met a lot of awesome people, and, you know, Red Lobster took me back, and yeah, they did. I love Red Lobster. So I had a job, and I had a sponsor, and everything was great, and, you know, John decided not to go through with the papers, and he paid the lawyer and said, just forget it, because she's sober, and things were great, and then it didn't come, you know, all at once. You know, I had to earn that trust back, and oh my God, my daughter, she's so precious, and like little like that. Oh God, are you kidding me? So I got to finally. I mean, I missed her first tooth, her first steps, her first birthday. I miss all that, but it doesn't matter because I don't have to miss anything else from now on. So, and God bless. I mean, just the gift of her seeing me sober is just, oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God. So, so my husband, oh, there we go. He's my husband now. Yep. So, we get married. Well, here's how it goes. So, he, like, proposed to me back when, I don't even remember because I was, woo. So, I still, I lost the ring. The people were rummaging through my purse. The ring was gone. So, it's okay. I got a new one. It was good. Pawn shop. You need a nice ring. The pawn shop. So, we got married. Oh, So I was like, hey, I kind of want to have another kid now, you know? Like, I was like, maybe we should get married. Okay, cool. So we did, and it was amazing. And so that's April and so of 2010. So 2008 is when my original sobriety day I was telling you about. Yeah, September 15th. Man, that day was, yes, I was ready. So this is 2010. Yep. So, you know, I worked the steps. I worked like 1 through 10. Yeah, you know, 1 through, well, 9, I suppose, right? 1 through 9. 10, 11, and 12, I worked. Yep. All right, I'm done with that. Okay, I'm done with 11. Okay, done with 12. Yay. So, I mean, I still went to meetings, but I didn't really still work 10, 11, and 12. So, but I was still going to meetings, so, I mean, that helps, you know. But, so when it came time for... a vacation, you know, I was like, oh, I kind of feel like I want to feel some kind of way. And so my dad had been remarried. We went to visit him in Athens, and like I rummaged through her pills and I found one that I thought might maybe. So I took it. And no, I didn't take it right away, I just took it. Went to the beach. And that's where I took it. And I thought that was terrible, yes, but I also like put it back here, you know? Like, it didn't really happen. So I kept coming to meetings and, you know, I picked up a chip on August 15th or September 15th. And, you know, I was just sick. I was so sick. And my sponsor's like, you need a new sponsor. You need a sponsor you can see all the time and call on a regular basis, because I was in a different area. And so I'm like, okay, cool. So I get a new sponsor and I start working the steps again, like freaking in detail. Like the second time around, are you kidding me? I'm like, whoa, like more will be revealed? Yes, ma'am, more will be revealed. And I'm learning that still. So new sponsor, working step 4, and I'm like, here it goes. I'm going to tell her. And I told her. And she's like, change your sobriety date. And I was like, oh! I mean, that's right. That's what I had to do. So I changed my sobriety date. And I started sharing about it. And holy cow. Like, oh my gosh. Life is just, I mean, I'm just learning so much more now. Like, oh my gosh, 6 and 7 has been the story of my life lately. And so much so that it's freaking driving me crazy sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, it's, oh my God, it's, oh. I just, Lord, I'm just doing the thing, and it's all with God's help, and you know, my, the God of my childhood has become the God of my recovery, but he's more loving, he's more kind, he cares, and I can talk to him whenever I want, whether I'm doing good or not, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't have to be perfect to talk to God. And I don't have to be perfect in this program. Progress, not perfection. And it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I'm so grateful. And I mean, what else can I say, really? But I love this program. And it can work for somebody who's purely alcoholic, somebody that's mixed up like me. I mean, it can work for so many people. Like, it's, and I want no disrespect towards this program. So I hope, well, I don't really care if I offended you, but no, I'm just kidding. That's that fear of people, remember? Yeah. I don't care what you think about me. So, I mean, really, I guess that's all I got to share. Thanks for sharing.